Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the RADCOM Ltd. Second Quarter 2017 Results Conference Call. All participants are present in listen-only mode. Following management's formal presentation, instructions will be given for the question-and-answer session. For operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded August 7, 2017. On the call today is Yaron Ravkayi, RADCOM CEO, and Ran Vered, RADCOM CFO. By now, we assume you have seen the earnings press release, which was issued earlier today. It is available on all the major financial news feeds. Please note that the management has prepared a presentation for your reference that will be used during the call. If you have not downloaded it yet, you may do so through a link on the investor section of RADCOM's website at www.radcom.com/investor-relations. If you have any trouble, please send Mark Rolston an email at markr@radcom.com, and he will send it to you right away. Before we begin, I'd like to review the safe harbor provision. Forward-looking statements in the conference call involve a number of risks and uncertainties, including but not limited to the company's statements about its 2017 financial guidance, including revenues, gross margins, quarterly fluctuations, and profitability, the expected impact of the changes in Israel Innovation Authority grants, cash available for new opportunities, strategy, market share growth, and extension of its leadership position, potential pipeline and opportunities, investments in the infrastructure and research and development to support the company's growth, expected continuance of the company's momentum in the second half of 2017, AT&T's continuance as an important customer and key reference, and its plans to virtualize approximately 55% of their network by the end of 2017, and projected sales cycles and relationships with top-tier carriers. The company does not undertake to update forward-looking statements. The full safe harbor provision, including risks that could cause actual results to differ from these forward-looking statements, are set forth in the presentation and in the company's SEC filings. In this conference call, management will be referring to certain non-GAAP financial measures, which are provided to enhance the user's overall understanding of the company's financial performance. By excluding certain non-cash charges, non-GAAP results provide information that is useful in assessing RADCOM's core operating performance and in evaluating and comparing our results of operations on a performance on a consistent basis from period to period. The presentation of this additional information is not meant to be considered a substitute for the corresponding financial measures prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Investors are encouraged to review the reconciliations of GAAP to non-GAAP financial measures, which are included in the quarter's earnings release. I'd like to repeat the information about the presentation. If you have not downloaded it yet, you may do so through a link on the investor section of RADCOM's website at www.radcom-investor-relations. If you have any trouble, send Mark an email at markr@radcom.com, and he will send it to you directly. Now I'd like to turn over the call to Yaron. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and thank you all for joining us today. We were very pleased with our execution during the second quarter as we made significant progress on our key initiatives. In particular, our relationship with AT&T continues to grow. On their most recent earnings call, AT&T again emphasized their network virtualization efforts being one of the main factors for their improved operational efficiency. Also, AT&T reiterated that they are well on their way to virtualizing 55% of their network functions by the end of 2017, up from 34% at the end of 2016. As a result, we continue to expect AT&T to remain an important customer and key reference for the company as we continue to play a major part in their network virtualization strategy over the coming years. Regarding our pipeline of opportunities, we are pleased to say that we finalized a very comprehensive NFV trial with a top-tier service provider, which we now expect to result in a new important NFV project for the company. We continue to engage with other top-tier service providers executing trials, as well as expanding our sales activities. We are focused on the service providers that are either planning on migrating to NFV or those that have already begun their NFV transformations. As a reminder, we expect the NFV transformation to be a 5 to 10 year cycle, with the early adopters being followed by additional service providers. We now see the industry gravitating around OpenStack as the operating system for cloud networks, as well as ONAP being the open source standard for advanced service and network orchestration. We are closely following these industry trends, which are very favorable to RADCOM, as AT&T continues to drive the underlying architecture and requirements significantly, and we're a major part of this ecosystem. As NFV is a transformation that is at the cutting edge of technology, it is difficult to forecast the path of the transformation. However, with the NFV trial mentioned previously, we see that when a service provider decides to virtualize their mobile network, RADCOM is the go-to standard and leading the industry for NFV service assurance. Another important factor is that we are reiterating that the decision-making cycle for the service providers is not short. This is driven primarily by their ability to finalize their NFV transformation plans and move from trials that they are executing on their entire mobile network and then moving to actual deployment decisions. We're assuming that as more service providers transition to NFV, the technology maturity and standardization with ONAP will drive more service providers to start actual transformations and move from the lab stages. We also expect service providers to significantly reduce their equipment spend as they don't want to create throwaway as they evaluate and move forward with their NFV plans. This can create pent-up demand, which again is very favorable to us and can have a positive impact in the future. Given our strong and growing pipeline of opportunities, we are confident that our investment in infrastructure will pay off, and as Ran will highlight in a few minutes, we plan to increase our investments to support this new NFV relationship with this significant inflection point for the company. We're expecting to remain with a moderate non-GAAP operating profit as we capture the NFV market. We believe the increase in investment will result in future returns, allowing us to capture additional opportunities as well as advancing our product leadership, given that a significant part of our investment is made into our R&D. Now moving on to our results for the second quarter. We are very pleased with our second quarter results, and as you can see on slide 6, revenues for the quarter increased by 24% year over year to $8.9 million. Our GAAP net loss was $204,000 or $0.02 per share. We achieved a non-GAAP net income of $0.4 million or $0.03 per diluted share. Similar to the past few quarters, we are focused on continuing a close relationship with AT&T, executing existing contracts, including expansions with current customers, running trials with new customers, and investing in our engineering resources as we move to a new phase and prepare to engage with an additional top-tier operator. During the quarter, we are pleased to have closed an additional purchase order with one of our key accounts in APAC, Asia-Pacific, and an important expansion deal with a Tier 1 operator in Latin America. The progress during the second quarter highlights the advantage of being a first mover in this space and participating in the most aggressive transformation today. Our approach of enabling a path to NFV and future-proofing purchasing decisions continues to resonate with customers, and we expect the momentum to continue during the second half of the year and beyond. So to summarize, we are very pleased with our execution during the second quarter, given that RADCOM remains the go-to NFV vendor for customer experience. We are well positioned to maintain the momentum. With that, I will stop and turn the call over to Ran Vered, our CFO, to discuss the financial results. Ran, please.
Thank you, Ramon, and I all. Since we have the financial results, I will just go over the highlights in slide 6. To help you understand the result, I will be referring mainly to non-GAAP numbers, which excludes share-based compensation. Revenue for the quarter was $8.9 million, up 24% year over year. our gross margin for the quarter was 71% on a non-GAAP basis. As a reminder, we expect gross margin to continue to fluctuate depending upon the mix of each quarter revenue. Our gross R&D for the quarter on a non-GAAP basis increased to $2.6 million from $1.6 million in the second quarter of 2016, which was in line with our ramp-up plan and highlights our strategy of investing to support future growth. Also, we received approximately $300,000 from the Israel Innovation Authority during the period, compared to $756,000 in the second quarter of last year. As a result, our net R&D for the quarter was $2.3 million compared to $807,000 last year. We wanted to point out that we now expect to receive approximately $600,000 from the Israel Innovation Authority during 2017 compared to 2016 when we received approximately $1.7 million. This is due to changes in the way the government manages the plan. It is important to note that this does not change how we plan to operate the business, as we remain committed to innovation and extending our technology leadership. Sales and marketing expenses for the quarter increased to $2.8 million on a non-GAAP basis, up from $1.7 million in the second quarter of 2016 due to headcount increase we had over the past year, aligned with our go-to-market strategy. G&A expenses for the quarter on a non-GAAP basis totaled $775,000 compared to $1 million in the second quarter of 2016. Operating income on a non-GAAP basis for the quarter was $380,000 compared with $1.6 million for the second quarter of 2016. Net income for the quarter on a non-GAAP basis was $416,000 or 3 cents per diluted share. On a GAAP basis, as you can see in slide 5, we reported a net loss for the quarter of approximately $204,000 or 2 cents per diluted share. Turning to the balance sheet, as you can see in slide 9, our cash and cash equivalents as of the end of the quarter were $36.2 million. We believe that our strong cash balance places the company on a solid footing for addressing the big Tier 1 opportunities. Now turning to guidance. We are reiterating our fiscal 2017 guidance range of 36 to 29 million in revenues, given the strong first half result combined with overall visibility with existing and potential new customers. While we don't plan to providing quarterly guidance, we wanted to point out that the revenue can become lumpy due to the timing of specific project milestones. Therefore, we can see Q3 revenue ranging from slightly down or above Q2 results, given that several key milestones fall exactly at the tail end of Q3 and can be pushed out to the next quarter while our annual guidance remains the same. Given our expectation of the new NAV trial to result in a project, we are increasing our R&D, our gross R&D expense to ensure that we have the appropriate resources in place to service this new Tier 1 customer. This, combined with the changes to the Israel Innovation Authority, that I mentioned earlier, is expected to result in operating profitability during the second half of the year to be roughly at the same level as the first half of the year as we continue to invest in infrastructure. As a reminder, we view and continue to manage our business on an annual basis because our quarter results can fluctuate due to the timing of implementation milestone. That ends our prepared remarks. Yaron and I will turn it back to the operator so we can take questions. Operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we'll begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star 1. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're using speaker equipment, kindly lift the handset before pressing the numbers. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please stand by while we poll for your questions. The first question is from Alex Henderson of Needham & Company. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to make sure I got a clean statement of what you're saying here. So the third quarter you're suggesting is probably fairly close to the second quarter on the the revenue, but you're not changing your full year, so piling it a little bit more into the fourth quarter based on timing issues. Could be up or down in the third quarter is what I caught. Is that correct?
Yes. It can be slightly down or slightly up. So there is a range there. And, you know, we decided to disclose it so everybody can model it accordingly.
Yep. And then the second thing is, just to be clear, the NRE coming in at 600 or so for the year, should we be using that in 18 as well? You know, it's hard for us to know what the changes in the NRE program in Israel looks like. So is that consistent with what we should be using next year as well?
It's hard for us also to say. I think, as you know, we modeled it a little bit different. I think, you know, one model can be to carry it to next year. And as we get clarity into exactly the plans, we'll share it. It's not a secret.
Right, but we still have to forecast tomorrow.
Yeah, I would just carry it.
Suggest it's using
year.
The same amount?
Yeah.
Okay. And then just going back to the to the programs that you've announced here, sounds like a large program in LATAM. Can you kind of give us a sense of what the structure of that is, and similarly for the PACRIM? Is it, you know, starting now, going to, you know, roll out over the next couple of quarters? Is it starting in 18? When does that show up, and those two contracts show up as revenues?
The LATAM and the APAC?
Yeah, the LATAM and expansion and the PACRIM NFV project.
The APAC?
You made two announcements of two contracts on the call. You just talked about a deal in LATAM and a deal in PACRIM.
Yeah.
When do we expect those revenues to accrue? Is it going to be smooth? Is it going to be starting this year? Is it going to be next year? Can you give us some revenue recognition?
Both of them are going to start to impact us positively this year.
So a little bit in 17 and majority in 18, or partly, you know, 50-50 or 75-25, any sense of the cadence between the 2 years?
The majority will be in 2017. And the reminder in 2018.
Okay. And then we've talked about, you know, a number of projects, 9 or so companies that are talking about doing field trials, 3 or 4 that were in field trials. Can you give us an update where we are on those projects? Is there any progress in bringing down some of these larger deals that you've been talking about and chasing after?
Yes. So first of all, you know, we're disclosing here that we're close to a project on one of them. So I think that's very positive news for all of us. The remainder of the trials basically continue. Some have finished the evaluation, the technical evaluation stage. Now they're more like coupling the decision around us and exactly what type of project to do together with how their transformation to NFV looks like. This is why, you know, when I referred to many of the comments in the scripted portion, I try to give color on some of these carriers as they make decisions. I'm expecting some of them to continue to evaluate how we fit into their plans, and this can potentially turn into deals in 2018, I would say, maybe with some early surprises this year. So, but the one that we disclosed, we expect it to materialize this year.
Okay. I'll cede the floor. Thank you.
The next question is from Dimitri Netis of William Blair. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Congrats on a good quarter, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, so I just want to make sure you've addressed Alex's question and that we've capturing this correctly. I think what you had said was the two deals were the expansion deals in APAC and LATAM. And then on top of it, this is separate, you want an NFV with a fairly large Tier 1 operator, which is an NFV project. The other two are kind of continuation of your existing relationships. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I would start by being excited from a Tier 1 win, and then if you recall that I mentioned, I think I touched on it last quarter, that the company did a very good job in doing work with our existing install base. The result of the expansion in Latin America and the expansion in Asia Pacific is a result of that work.
Okay, and then let's focus on... Thank you, Yaron. Thanks for that clarification. Let's focus on the NFV project in hand. Can you tell us the geography you won that customer and, you know, roughly the size? Is that similar to, you know, the size of AT&T, smaller? I mean, I can't imagine anybody being bigger than AT&T at this point, but just give us a little bit of color around this project, and just want to make sure you will expect to see revenue in the back half of this year. That's basically what you said. But just kind of correlating to the size of this project vis-a-vis AT&T project you currently have.
Okay, so I'm going to disappoint you, Dimitri. I need to stay quiet on this for the time being, and I do promise that when I can disclose, I will. Just sensitive time with the, you know, reaching the signature phase on with this customer.
Okay, but do we know, like, the size? Is it fairly material operator as big as AT&T? Can you comment on that, or is that not possible at this point as well?
I would say that it's not possible, but I would say it's a very important milestone for the project, and I think you can, understand the importance also from the fact that you see the level of investment that we're preparing for it. And as this thing gets clear and fully secured, we will make an attempt to disclose more, of course, without violating anything that we're not allowed to violate.
Okay, fair enough. I'll leave that be. Let's then maybe focus on AT&T this quarter. What was the rough contribution of AT&T in the quarter?
Hi, Dimitri. So AT&T contributed roughly 47% to the revenue this quarter.
47, okay. And when you guys said you expanded the relationship with AT&T, what do you mean by that? Was there additional... You know, this is like a licensed and pretty defined schedule. So are you winning new applications at AT&T is what you mean, or do you have additional maintenance that's flowing in the model right now? Can you give us a little, color on what's going on with AT&T?
Just one second, Dimitri. So we're working with we're on an ongoing basis working with AT&T, and we're receiving additional work that was not contracted in the original contract. What we can say is that we now forecast till the end of the year to be at around 55%. Revenue coming from AT&T, which is, I think, higher than the 50, if I recall, what we forecasted before.
Okay, great.
Just take into consideration, some of this is also impacting next year, the relationship. It's, to summarize, AT&T, it's a positive relationship. We continue to deliver on the ground. It's an active implementation at the cutting edge, and we focus on the things that we we're contracted to do, and once in a while we're asked to do additional things due to the positive nature of the relationship, and it's going very well.
Okay, very good. So just to summarize, I mean, whatever the run rate business you had, which was a three-year contract, so if I took that number, split it in three, next year that number is going to be higher by that additional contracted work that you won during the quarter. Is that fair?
Some of it might also impact this year, so we still don't know exactly. You know, there's a lot of accounting math and project math involved, so we'll see some of it this year and some of it next year. And there's still stuff also from the previous things that were signed that still impact the coming quarters and also impact next year. So.
All right. Okay. Very good. On the OPEX side, I guess that's my last question. You said you were increasing the R&D levels. You did about $5 million, excluding the OCS grants, including the $4.7 million of R&D. So what you're saying basically is that's the projection for the remainder of the year. September, December, we should be thinking about kind of roughly $5 million in R&D. Just kind of verify if that's the case. And then what are you investing as far as sales and marketing goes to support new projects? If you can give us, you know, additional personnel you're hiring and what that number is in support of this new project, that would be super helpful.
So I think what we're saying is that the overall profitability in the second half will be similar to the first half. Now, when you model, you see that the revenue projections for the second half are higher, which means that the costs are going to be higher. A lot of them are going to go into the R&D. We were now, because of the nature of the of this, you know, new tier one and the fact that some of the exact scope and, you know, the things that I can't disclose either, because some of it I don't fully know yet, how it impacts the year and how it impacts the resource planning, we're actually going through this exercise in the coming weeks. So, but at a high level, this is what we're modeling, what I just mentioned, an increase in the R&D, an increase, not so much an increase in sales and marketing, maybe there will be some increase there, and to maintain an overall profitability that we maintained in the first half.
Okay, yeah, I apologize. I should have mentioned profitability. I was looking at sort of, I understand as revenue would go up, you
yeah, so the headcount will go up, basically.
Right. Understood. Okay, understood. So, okay. And then how are we thinking about next year? I mean, what should we be thinking, you know, right now? You know, the models are sort of touching kind of the 9-10% operating margin. So what should we be thinking as far as operating margin coming into next year? How, you know, any guidance, if you will, or is it too early?
So I think it's a little bit too early for us to accurately model next year. If you use some top-down approaches, if we generate, you know, around the range that we're gravitating in the models for next year, then we're going to see already higher profitability next year than this year. But we don't have anything, I think, smarter to say than what's currently modeled. And I think as we go into the second half of this year and the clarity with this new tier one and more the ability to focus, of course, you know, we'll give the color and make sure that you guys modeled it as accurate as we can.
Okay. All right. And you're on. Can you give us a sense of how many people you need to support this additional NFV win? Either R&D or sales, either way.
Well, we're probably going to only be able to give it next quarter or probably next quarter. This is exactly what we're doing now. But
okay.
You can do if you do, you can roughly do the math, right? Because we've disclosed most of the pieces of the equation.
Right. Okay. All right.
An accurate number on exactly what goes to R&D, what cost of sales, things like that's what we're working now on.
Okay. I appreciate it, Ron. Yaron, thank you guys very much. I'll take the rest offline. Thank you.
Thanks,
Dimitri.
The next question is from Mike Arnold. Please go ahead.
Hi, Yaron. Thanks for taking my question. If you can say, I'm just curious, was this deal the tier one, I guess the top carrier one that we're talking about here, was that a sort of direct-to-customer sort of sale or trial, or did you go to market with a partner on that one?
You came across a little garbled, so you're going to need to repeat.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm curious on the top-tier customer that we're talking about in the call today. Was that a direct-to-carrier sale, or did you go to market with a partner?
Direct.
Okay. And I'm curious also in terms of your partnerships. Amdocs on their call last week, they talked about a couple ONAP deals that they apparently had won on the earnings transcripts with Bell, Orange, and Comcast. Should we still assume sort of a high probability that RADCOM will go along for some of those deals, or how do you guys sort of slot into that scenario?
First of all, as there's the Amdocs angle and the ONAP angle, sometimes they align, but they're not, they don't overlap, not always overlap. So both of them can have the potential of driving business. I would say that the company's focus today is more on the mobile networks. This is where we see the big demand for customer experience. You need less customer experience in wireline and cable operators, although we're checking these markets to see what type of customer experience needs do they have. And we'll take it from there. So the answer, I think, is as we see mobile operators go to ONAP, there should be a direct correlation with our ability to generate business there. You know, of course, you need to work with these operators. It's not automatic that they choose ONAP that that we get a deal. Okay, so we need to work on that. And when it's not a mobile operator, it's yet to be seen. So the need for customer experience or pro-based assurance is still under definition, and we're working on it, and we'll share this when it becomes more mature. We start to engage them, some of them.
Okay, very good. And then I just have one more question regarding the competition. Your big incumbent competitor is sort of out there talking to analysts and investors that they still feel like they're in the front of the line at all the CSPs around the world for service assurance deal. I guess I'd just ask how you'd respond to those comments in terms of being first in line as it relates to pure service assurance in a V deals going forward.
How did David respond to Goliath? It's a biblical question.
Yeah, I know.
So,
okay.
You know, with the rock between the eyes. So, I can't control what they comment. We see NetScout in some of the as a legacy provider in some of the install base that we address that are moving to NFV. We see a lot of positive feedback from all the customers and what they're seeing from us, and with clear feedback that we have the differentiating technology, so you can do the math of what they have. You know, I don't sit in their R&D labs, but feedback from the customer usually is the most valuable one. And I think the progress that we're making, and you know, I've disclosed what I can on this, and more to come, as we say, is I think evident of the progress that we're making. They do have a huge install base, so I do expect once in a while that they will announce a deal here and there that's exactly like I announce here, an extension of APAC or an extension of Latin America. They will have, they continue to do business. They're not out of business. So we will, I'm assuming that we will see some of that as well.
Okay.
I'm trying to focus the big prizes, so that's where we're focused.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks.
There's a follow-up question by Alex Henderson. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so given your guidance here for the back half of the year with a substantial increase in R&D and a fall off in the NRE, it sounds like you're talking about roughly $3.5 million plus in quarterly revenue or quarterly R&D in the fourth quarter. Is that the right ballpark that we should be thinking about?
So what you're saying, Alex, is that you know on our overall OPEX, so either on the other way around on our profitability. On our operating income, we say that taking the guidance on the revenue, taking the level of OPEX, that the second half of the year in terms of nominal profitability will be the same level of the first half. So,
yeah, Rand, I heard the guide, and I'm just having a hard time making it work. So I'm trying to figure out how it works, and it sounds like you go to a pretty good loss in the third quarter and a spike in revenues in the fourth quarter. So you're offsetting the loss, but still, you know, getting a pretty good sized profit in the fourth quarter. But the fourth quarter exit rate on R&D is important because I would assume, and the second question is that continues at that level as we go into the first half of next year. So I'm just trying to right gauge my expense levels exiting the year. So the R&D line is a critical variable here, and it sounds like $3.5 million plus is the exit rate. Is that correct, or am I off?
It makes sense.
Okay, and then second question along the same lines then, are we seeing any downdraft in the gross margins in the back half, or are they staying in the 70s?
So we don't see currently our model is to have the gross margin to be the 70 plus.
Okay, so it's all in the OPEX lines then that causes the downdraft in the EPS in the back half relative to prior forecast.
Yeah.
Just Alex, note that Q3 can be higher than Q2 or slightly low. We don't know yet where it will fall. So.
Yeah, but clearly, it's going to produce a loss even in either case, given the significant increase in R&D spend.
If it will be higher than Q2, it won't result in a loss.
Well, then how do you get a spike in the fourth quarter and not end up with higher profitability than the first half? I mean, the fourth quarter alone ought to be larger than the first half.
But then if you look at half by half, then just make sure it's hard to model per quarter because we're not giving because we don't know exactly what will happen. But if you calculate,
it falls out. If you've given us the third quarter guide and a full year, the fourth quarter is solvable by definition.
But keep in mind that we are in the process of ramping up, and some of the ramp up
will happen in Q4,
most of it. Mm-hmm. This is something that it's hard for us to predict. When the ramp-up will be. So actually assume that most of the ramp-up will be in the tail end of Q3 and the beginning of Q4.
Right. So again, $3.5 million run rate in R&D, is that the rate that we should be starting the year in 18 at?
It makes sense, Alex. It makes sense.
Okay. And then can you tell us what the headcount was for the second quarter?
Yeah. So we are currently at 205 people.
And okay. So how much of the pressure on margins here is a function of the exchange rate swings that have occurred over the course of the quarter? I mean, clearly the shekel has moved quite a bit.
Yeah, very good question. So actually, comparing to Q1 on a constant currency basis, we actually took a hit of $2,000 this quarter.
$200,000,
yeah, sorry.
So it's costing roughly $600,000 swing in the numbers over the course of the year?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And just going back to the 2018 numbers, now I realize you guys have lots of variables here, but you know, the street numbers assume a pretty good ramp, and they were predicated on a pretty strong fourth quarter exiting the year. It sounds like, given what you're guiding towards, that the full year EPS for next year is on the street maybe quite a bit too high, at least from the perspective of taking NRE down, but also probably from the rate of spend in the fourth quarter being annualized over the course of 2018. Sounds like those numbers are too high. Would you give us some general guidance of how we should be thinking about that? I realize you don't want to be too explicit, but again, the street does have to make forecasts, and this is a fairly important determinant.
So I think it's a little bit premature. We are just now concluding or start to conclude our ramp-up plan, but I think it's a fair assumption to assume that that next year profitability will be a little bit less than the current forecast from both the NRE perspective, as you mentioned, and due to the ramp-up. How much it will be down? Is it going to be, instead of 14%, is it going to be 10 or 12 or 8? It's really a little bit premature to say.
Right. So just to be clear, this is success-based spending as a result of your visibility on new contract wins that you think are likely to drive incremental needs to deliver both on the sales and marketing installation front as well as on the R&D support front.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you.
The next question is from George Marema. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, Yaron. I was wondering, several months ago, you guys showcased the Maverick running on OSM, and there are some rather, I'd say, aggressive tier ones out there that are sort of warming to the idea of merging OSM into ONAP. I was just curious with that the ecosystem, how Radcom's position is.
We're positioned very well for this to happen. So with the key service providers that have been working on OSM, we have an existing relationship with them, and they see the potential. So I would expect they adopt ONAP just to have a magnifying positive impact. It was already a positive situation.
And then back in the summertime, you sort of talked about you were testing in the lab some additional use cases for V-probes. And on your website, you have several different products that are listed in all kinds of areas. You have like an M2M analytics products, like a marketing products. Can you give us an update on where those products are and when you might expect some kind of deployment of such products, expansions?
First of all, everything that we have on the website is installed with some customers. We didn't put futuristic modules on the website. I would tell you that the major focus of the company is to do the heavy lifting required for a carrier to move into NFV, which is basically providing them the eyes, the assurance eyes, that their NFV network works. That's where most of the focus of the company is today. Because we think this is the number one task that the industry is gravitating against. On the course of that, as we progress and continue to progress, we do have additional things that we work on and we might work on in the future, which will be adjacent to this. If we go and completely go after another addressable market, I'll disclose it and I'll give the color.
Well, but it sounds like in general, sort of taking a macro view of this, that RADCOM is slowly but surely expanding its addressable markets into, you've had recent announcements of Comcast Cable moving with Amdocs. You have additional use cases we're testing. So is it fair to say that over time that RADCOM will continue to expand its addressable markets?
The address, maybe I'm missing something on the terminology, but the addressable market for us, or the addressable market, let's say that we have a significant advantage, is where service providers migrate to NFV, where like the standard assurance because of everything that we've done with AT&T, and now we'll be doing with this additional tier one carrier. That's where the focus is. Now, you mentioned Comcast, and Comcast is a cable operator. So it's not in our addressable market yet. What I mentioned earlier is that we are looking at the cable operators and also operators that launch solution in their fixed line, whether it's business or residential, to see how their assurance needs or customer experience, pole-based customer experience and assurance needs, the areas that we operate, provide them value. Now, we believe that there is an angle there that will increase the addressable market, but it's not the main focus of the company as of today. It might be an area that we start to expand into 2018.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If there are any additional questions, please press star 1. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. Please stand by while we poll for more questions. There are no further questions at this time. Thank you. This concludes RADCOM LTD second quarter 2017 results conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may go ahead and disconnect.